Everybody, drop your buffs.
Welcome back to Drop Your Buffs. I'm Sean Ross.
I'm Evan Ross Katz.
And we are here talking Survivor 46, Episode 4, Don't Touch the Oven. Survivor 46, they say they are not doing themed seasons anymore, but this is the Banu show.
Truly.
Apparently, well, Banu has... Somebody sent me a tweet that said that Banu in his four episodes had more confessionals than Parvati did in Micronesia over the course of the entire season. And I just heard on RHAP that Banu had four confessionals less than Erica in 41.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Not always a statistics, you know, person, but that's pretty glaring.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm curious to get your overall take on this. Obviously, we've been having a rough start to Survivor 46, and here we have another really strange episode where, yes, there was a tribal council, but there wasn't a vote, and the end was very plainly shown to us throughout the entire episode. Curious to get your take on the fall of Banu.
Well, can I back us up just to sort of, I'd love to bridge last week to this week, which is okay. To say we put a poll up, or rather, I requested one, you did the work to put it up, and so can you give, I'm not on our social very often, so can you update me, I believe we wanted to get like a temperature check on 46 from our listeners, so what was the, where are people at with that?
So the temperature check on Survivor 46, three episodes in, on the scale, I would say that it's roughly in the 25 to 30% positive range. So most people not enjoying Survivor 46 of our followers, which is a very specific group on the internet. And temperature check on Drop Your Buffs recaps is sitting about 85-90%. So whoa, we're doing well.
Oh, thank you guys and girls and theys. Wow, that's so heartening. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, where I am at with episode 4. So yeah, this was a horrible episode of Survivor, par for the course for 46 so far. My top level thought is, because I would, you know, again, I'm going to do that thing where, like, I talk about 46 as though it's a completed season and it stacks up against the others, which I realize you can't do, but I'm doing it. So I would put this on the bottom with 43. But I see this crucial difference in that 43, if to my memory, which is scant, which I think says something, was just a boring season of Survivor. This... it's not boring so much as it is bad. And so I'm wondering sort of like what metric sort of, like what would I rather, if this is what I'm getting, would I rather Survivor be like boring, but like watchable, or like bad, but entertaining ? And I don't have an answer. It's more like I'm putting that forward.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I don't know that I feel completely the same, because when I think back to 43, I remember being a little bit invigorated, especially by the pre-merge. I think 43 fell apart at some point, and I think that fell apart around the merge when they had to start listing all the advantages that different people had on the screen, and it was getting like really... convoluted in a way, and then just the people I wanted to advance weren't advancing, and the people I didn't want to advance were advancing, and so it fell apart sort of mid to late season for me, where I remember being like really excited about some of the people on 43, like especially Carla in those early days of 43. Like I loved watching Carla, and there were others as well, don't ask me who, but there was others that I was excited about. And they all kind of left. And some of those, like, chaos agents, what was her name? It started with an E. whatever. but there was somebody out there that was, like, a little bit chaotic. And she went pre-merge, I think. So I think the pre-merge was like a little more exciting. We're here, we're just getting like same story over and over. It's this purple tribe just losing and losing and losing, and the dynamic can't change because there's not enough of them there for it to change. And because you've got this character, Banu, who's just like sucking up all of the focus on that to the point where he becomes the obvious boot, that they can't even construct a story around him not being the boot. And so I think that that's like, I don't know. I think it points to problems in the format of the show. Mm-hmm. And like, I can't talk about this anymore. Like, I've already said it all, but this three tribe format, small tribes, like that is a problem. And if they're not looking at this and being like, oh, this is like actually not the ideal scenario, then I don't know what they're doing. But I think it's also a false equivalence because these are 90-minute episodes and Survivor 43 was 60-minute episodes, right? And so this 90 minutes, I thought, was so brutal because there was so much in here that didn't need to be here. And I know we ask for camp life, but like when I ask for camp life, I'm hoping that it's going to be interesting. Not that we have to check in with each individual camp reading their tree mail and then reacting to the tree mail as if it's saying something of any significance. Like I just don't need that. It felt like we were filling a lot of time. And so on the flip side, so that when we're not getting that, we're just getting Banu upset and crying. And it's like, well, what's... Is this the best 90 minutes we had from this 2 days? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're pointing out the two big complaints that you and I have voiced for a while now, and I'm seeing the fandom really kind of getting louder about, which is the 90 minutes just don't feel necessary. There's not something greater that we're accomplishing within those 90 minutes. I think this was this the first or second episode to even have a reward challenge, which you would think that
there,
like...
Yeah. There was a reward challenge. It was like episode one opened with a reward challenge.
Got it. But nonetheless, it's like you would think with this expanded time, we'd have plenty of time for two challenges per episode. And like that wasn't even the case. But so outside of the 90 minutes, which people are complaining about, and then I see this three tribe format as something that the fandom is more unifying around the fact that this is not the way to go. I don't want to talk too much about Banu just because I think it's all on the page. So I don't have a ton of like analysis to do about it. I feel like Survivor the show made a big investment in Banu as a character in the hope that he would stir something in audiences. What I'm unsure of is the story of Banu that Banu was selling. I am curious if the producers felt like that was indeed his story, or if they thought he was completely delusional and people would have the inverse reaction. And I can't tell from production which way they swung on that. I kind of believe, knowing what we know, they really did believe that he would like touch a million hearts or whatever the quote is. But it's just it's an odd decision, I think, from the show to lean so heavily on any character for four episodes. Banu reminds me of, y'all know I love to make Drag Race comparisons. There's this queen on the current season of Drag Race, Maya, who just went home in the last episode, who I love, I really do, but she should have been like a third or fourth boot. She just wasn't at the level of the other queens. And because she was a talented lip syncer, they kept keeping her around. And so when it got to the tail end of her run, it was just so obvious that she like wasn't meant to be on this show anymore. And she was pulling from time that we needed to spend on the other truly qualified queens. And that is what I feel with Banu, where not only did these four episodes center around him so much, but we were forced to get these like that Tevin backstory out of nowhere, which felt very much like the sequel to Q's backstory out of nowhere in the last episode. And then like, the soda singing with the tribe, it's like, we've done this before. Like, I don't know. And again, maybe at some point me is the idiot because we've done a lot of this before and I've eaten it up when it's been done time and time again. But the repetition is certainly getting to me. And I have to say, I'm in LA right now and I watched over with my friends who are Survivor fans as well. And like, people were talking through the episode. Like, there was just a lack of focus from the group that when we watch Drag Race, we are, like, glued, you know? On the commercial break, we do, you know, we'll catch up. But, like, people just aren't... I'm having trouble... And it's you know, it's one thing if, like, I disagree with the fandom, but I feel like the fandom is... And again, using my friends as the representative, just, like, people aren't really, like, into this.
Sure. I do have a little bit of a hot take regarding Banu, which is that now that he's gone and that he did go in this episode, I kind of don't mind that they spent so much time with him in these first four episodes, because it was a uniquely, like, I don't even know if the word is chaotic, but it's a uniquely fascinating downfall of a player really early in the game. And I think we've had people like this flame out really early. None spring to mind, but, you know, I think it's happened that somebody's sort of out of their depth, wanted to be on the show, either was a fan or not, but sort of, like, went in and went hard and found out they were out of their depth and just, like, got sent home. And I don't think it happens that often, though, and especially not in the new era when they're casting these really game body type of people. And so to have somebody come in and think they're one thing, but turn out to be something else and have to realize that and reckon with it, I do think it's a compelling story. Did we get too much of it? 100%. But I think there's something there in, like, a series of 45-minute episodes that is compelling as, like, a let's focus on this and then we can move on with the rest of the game, which, you know, will be similar to everything you've seen in the past five seasons. So, like, as, like, an outlier situation, I actually don't mind Banu's story in 46.
Okay. I mean, I do, but I don't, like, I do mind it, but I also, like, I'm not vehement about it. And I understand your perspective where it's like, at least this was a story that existed that wasn't producer crafted. But I think it came at a huge cost in the sense that we have no idea about these other two tribes whatsoever. The limited time we have spent with them has been just these bizarre moments that, I mean, the only real gem of this episode, courtesy of Gem, was the, you know, the mislead with the, you know, searching for the idol. But I do feel like they, like, bolded and underlined an exclamation point that moment in a way where I wanted her just to do it and, like, move on and, like, be like, hee hee. And it was, like, making it very, very, very clear what she was doing. And it's like, I get it. Like, she found this advantage and she's doing what I think a lot of smart players would do, which is just throw people off and then act, you know, like they don't know. I'm shocked that the scenes for next week seem to imply that we're not getting any kind of swap. That we are going to continue on this course. I know people were surprised that this episode didn't have a swap. It's sort of, what are we doing? And if we do in fact lose Kenzie or Tiffany or Q in the next episode, I feel like that might be the thing that, like, really pushes fans against the three tribe format even more. I mean, they already are, but.
Yeah, totally. It's not fun to watch a small tribe go down to no tribe. And we kind of had this in 41. I've mentioned this before with the Ukrain Ua tribe that was Ricard and Shan, where it sort of, it went down to the two of them. But for some reason, like, that to me was a more compelling story. And I don't know if it's because Shan and Ricard were more charismatic characters on the season. And I mean, that all came at a cost as well. We didn't see Erica's tribe in the pre-merge. But I, for some reason, I look back on that a little more fondly. Maybe it's because it's the first time we had seen it in a while. And now that we've done that, it's like, I don't need to do it again. And I don't know that there's anybody of Tiff, Q, or Kenzie who I actually like all of them. And I'm curious to see them move forward in the game. But I don't know that I'm, like, as invested in any of them as I was in, like, the Shan Ricard duo.
Right. And again, like, I don't even have much to say about any of the three of them because we've only seen them interact with these limited number of people. I had a moment in this episode being like, I wonder, like, what Kenzie is like on the show Survivor, because all we've seen is her either talking with Tiffany and Q, the people that she's ostensibly aligned with, or Banu. And even then it feels very disingenuous as, and I'm on Kenzie's side here. I don't think she needed to be genuine, but it's an uncomfortable situation when you have someone that you aren't working with, that you're not particularly fond of as a person and seems to only be able to talk game. So it's not even like you can build some sort of human connection and empathize with them on that level. So we're watching these three and they like really, I mean, I know the show will frame it as like their strategy, but like it's not a strategy. They're just in a majority and they're voting out the weak link. And then the idea that they like painted this like, well, Q could work with him and like mold him. It's like, no, we couldn't. Like, and also that's giving a lot of credence to Q's capabilities in this game, which I have, again, I have yet to see because there's no game to be played when there's only four people on the tribe.
Yeah. And I do think it's interesting that the Q sort of set this up as, well, I'm Rob and you're my Philip, Banu. And then there's sort of this surprise when Banu comes out and is like, after they find out that Randon was medevaced, and he's like, I have to tell you guys something. I spilled everything to the other tribes at the journey. Sorry about that. And Q's like frustrated. And it's like, well, Q, you wanted a Philip. You got a Philip. And so like, yeah. if you're going to be the coach and the master of the game that you're sort of like setting yourself up to be, understand what you got yourself into here. And I also think it's really interesting that when the show opens, and sort of like an interesting format change where they just open right where the last episode ended off. Like Jeff has just left camp and they're sort of like having to deal with all of this, and Banu's, you know, spilling everything that happened at the journey and going on his apology tour and all of that, that we do get the insight from Tiff and Q that they were going to send Kenzie home. Like, it was Kenzie's time to go last episode, and Randon didn't save Banu. Randon saved Kenzie. And that's an interesting dynamic. They're like, thank God, because I think moving forward with as a threesome with Tiff, Q, and Banu would have been really bad for the season. At least I have some hope here that I don't know if it's going to get like Tika 3 levels, but I do see something in each of Kenzie, Q, and Tiff where I think Banu was like, we had seen enough. We'd seen it all.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. I need everyone to come together and like merge at this point, just because like, again, I have nothing negative to say about Q, Tiffany, and Kenzie, but like after four episodes of this, like I'm not hankering to see how they're going to move forward in the game without Banu now. That's not an interesting next chapter to this.
Well, and that's the problem, is that if we move forward and if the Purple Tribe loses again next week, we already know, based on what we've seen, well, Q and Tiff are just going to come together and vote out Kenzie. So it's like yet another foregone conclusion. And so we're losing that element of mystery and suspense and like the ability for anybody to flip. I mean, like, we got three votes here. There's only so much that can happen.
Right.
You mentioned Soda singing over on the Nami tribe. I do just want to check in with you. How are you feeling about the undercurrent of music in Survivor 46?
Oh, right. I forgot about this. Okay, right. So now I'm connecting some dots here. So the undercurrent of music is really, I guess it's a combination of the contestant singing and then the sound people adding in the instrumentation underneath of it to really create an orchestral sound. Okay, well, I'm not hating it, I'll be honest. I did like think that was like a cute beat, but like I said, following the instances we've got of singing in the new era, where it's been more of a theme, and then obviously we've had, I mean, Sean's top five Survivor moment of all time with Jerry Manthe, her Fiona Apple cover in season two.
Not to mention Sonia singing Bye Bye Blue.
Forgot about that one. I didn't hate it. But, well, it's funny, I'm saying I didn't hate it, but didn't I open the episode being like, that was so annoying? I didn't hate it, but it's not giving me, like, so I guess it's like, my question is like, to what end, right? Like, if it's like, if they were singing and it turns out that there's like this tribe member within the group who's super annoyed by the singing, like if it was leading us to something, I think I could get there. But essentially it's like, we have this tribe hemorrhaging, right? And then it's like, we cut to this other tribe and like, what are they up to? It's Kumbaya and they're singing. And it's sort of like, and then it's like, and back to the hemorrhaging. So from a storytelling perspective, I guess I'm wanting more, but in terms of like You know, if the options are this or go on a journey or opening tree mail or like idol hunting, like I'll take this.
Okay, I have some things to say about this because I have to hand them a little bit of credit. Well, do I love the songs? Like, personally, not really. But I did think we got an iconic shot while the singing was happening of Venus sweeping the camp with a homemade broom. I thought that, like, that is an image similar to the way that, you know, Jake in Survivor 45 flip-flopping down the beach is an image burned in the brain. I think I'm going to have Venus sweeping the camps, like sweeping the sand, burned in my brain a little bit. I did think it was like a funny, I don't know, what do you call it? It's not a portmanteau. That's a combination of words, right? Mm-hmm. whatever. Not a diorama. Just a funny image. What do you call it when there's like a bunch of people and they create an image by like standing?
Tableau.
Tableau. That's what I meant. They both end in O. Okay. So I did think that was funny, but I have to say that, and maybe I need to hand a little credit here instead of criticizing, because as we know from episode one, Hunter is not a fan of songs. And he's also not a fan of furniture in his house, but that's beside the point. Hunter is not a fan of the singing. And we did get a cutaway to him in confessional with sort of like his head hung down. And he wasn't like, I hate this singing. He wasn't outright about it, but I think there's subtleties there. And later when they talk about, when Tevin starts to talk about like, I think Soda's playing this a little too hard. She's trying to make connections with everybody in the tribe where I thought she was supposed to be my number one. And he talks to Hunter about that. And Hunter seems on board like, yeah, maybe Soda's got to go. There's something there that like they didn't thread that needle of like, I'm annoyed by the singing and I'm threatened by her in the game. And therefore all that needs to come together and we're going to vote her out. But maybe I don't need that all handed to me on a platter because I also complain about when they over-explain the narrative to me. But I'm seeing moments of Hunter being a little annoyed by Soda, and I'm just going to savor that until I see what happens.
Okay, so I hear you. My thing is, I don't think we need to see tribes that haven't once gone to tribal council strategizing. I just think that like the idea that like Tevin is considering turning on his number one is super inconsequential when we have no reason to believe. Like, sure, you could argue maybe they're setting something up for down the line, but I just feel like the stakes are so low where it's like it feels like they're inserting plot because if I were playing Survivor, you know, we always say like you kind of want to know who your final two, who your final three are, etc. But I don't think at this stage in the game, because they're a tribe of six. Yeah, they're the one that's still six.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I think you want to have an idea of, like, if and when we go to tribal. But there's a very good chance going into episode five that this six can remain a six or at the very least a five. And chances are you're not going to merge and then turn on Soda in a merge. So I think if anything, it's sort of be like, it's like you might plant the idea that like, you know, I'm working with Soda, but like at the end of the day, Hunter's my number one, even though Soda might think she's my number one. Like, sure, we can entertain that. But again, the idea that like we're gaming so hard, I just don't think we're going into episode five and this tribe hasn't had to play the game yet. Like the game of Survivor doesn't begin until you vote people out. It doesn't. Like, oh, well, you could argue, like, you know, you're forming relationships. Okay, fine. But I stand by my point to an extent. And so I just don't think the fact that we're going to go into, like, we're about a third of the season done, and they have yet to go to tribal, make a vote, I just don't see the necessity.
Okay, I disagree on that, yeah, totally. Because I think it's like classic Survivor. It works much better on a two tribe season for sure to see. Yeah, because then that adds to the will they won't they of losing immunity, right? There's like we get a little bit of what's the dynamic is on this tribe, and then we get a little bit about the dynamic on this tribe, and here's who might be in trouble. Now we're going to immunity. We understand the stakes. So, oh my God, either Banu's going to go home or Soda's going to go home. Then they play the immunity challenge, and you're like, okay, now let's see how this shakes out. Can they get out of it? But when it's been four episodes and we haven't had the opportunity to see another tribe go to tribal, yes, it does get a little bit stale because it's like, well, if they don't go next time, this could easily change. Was this just a conversation that, you know, it was in the vein of, well, you, as we talk about all the time, you discuss every option. Is this one of the options that was discussed and they're just showing it to us? But I imagine that if we are seeing it, it will come to something at some point in the future. And I appreciate that because if in the future they sort of just dropped that, oh, suddenly Tevin and Soda are not close anymore, we would be like, well, where the hell did that come from? Now mm-hmm. I don't understand that.
Yes. Yeah. I definitely recognize in a lot of what we're saying, there's a damned if you do, damned if you don't quality, where it's like super easy to complain about a lot of these things, but also if it went the other way, we would be complaining, which I think says a lot about us, which I fully accept and I'm okay with. But I do wonder that, like, if I don't believe that Tevin would vote Soda if they went to tribal, because at the end of the day, let's say they were, let's game this out, let's say they were to go to tribal and they were to corral the votes. Obviously, when they go to the next challenge and the other two tribes are there, they're going to be shocked that Soda went home. And then when they merge, they're going to be like, who architected that vote? And everyone would be like, Tevin, which would put a huge target on Tevin. I think if you're talking, if the numbers are down to four, it makes more sense to potentially turn on a Soda. But when you have six, I think 95% of people would want to work with an ally at this juncture of the game than turn on an ally. It just doesn't... On the one hand, like, yeah, it's somewhat good television because it's the less predictable option, but I also don't think that it makes sense from a good game perspective. So I can see both. But again, it's like the fact that we're having this conversation when it's like, we have no reason to believe that this is going to happen. And then also to what you're saying, like, if this is sending out something that's going to happen, I find it a little on the nose because it's like the one time we check in with this tribe is to plant a seed for something down the line. I don't think that's rewarding narratively.
Right. And I have to correct myself also. I misspoke here. That tribe does not have six. They have five because Randon was medevaced, right? But the point, it's like, so... Yeah, Tevin and Soda and Hunter are allies. The narrative we have gotten up until the point that he sort of floats this idea that maybe she's a little too dangerous is that Liz and Venus are on the outs. And especially, I think, Venus, because Liz is involved in this conversation about Soda with Hunter and Tevin. And so, like, I think if that tribe is going to tribal council, you just take out Venus. Like, nobody wants to work with her. Nobody trusts her. Like, her only ally was Randon. He's gone. I think you obviously get rid of Venus. And again, that comes back to there's just not that many options. Like, Venus doesn't have a lot of options in a tribe this small to sort of, like, pick up an ally and flip a vote.
Yeah. Can I turn the convo?
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I remember the immunity challenge. For the reward challenge, it was also centered around people. That was when they had to take the circular, what do you call the
dip? Rings.
The rings. They had to get them over the three things, right?
Yeah.
How did it end? How did the reward challenge end? What was the final act?
Well, they had to like free their rings. They just had to ring toss them onto another pole. So they had to collect them from one pole and ring toss them onto another pole.
Right. And if I remember correctly, were any women involved in the final part of the reward challenge?
You're asking a lot of me.
Okay, sorry. Well,
I mean, Hunter did it for Nami. Siga, I can't remember who did it. And Yanu, I think Hugh did it.
Yeah, which then also was the case with the basketball at the end. And so I just wanted to bring it up to say, I find it really interesting in all of this sort of like new era of it all and sort of like reassessing the show that we're doing two challenges back to back, which I've complained about this for a long time, and this goes beyond New Era, but the idea that like these challenges ultimately either go puzzle, where it's like whoever's good at puzzles, or they go down to the strongest man in the tribe having to do something like basketball or something that requires physical upper body strength. And then obviously you have your exceptions, like the pole challenge, for instance, which favors smaller, strong women. But I'm just surprised that like we're still doing these challenges where, you know, when the designers are gaming this out, they're aware when they cast this season that people like Hunter and Q, like they know how this is going to go. Chances are it's not going to be Liz that's asked, or Mariah, to get the ball in the hoop. So I'm just surprised that in the new era, we're still doing this type of challenge, which ultimately just allows players like Q and Hunter to feel like they are the boss men of their tribe, because they are. Like, the show gives them that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also they're just incredibly repetitive.
Yes.
And it's not fun to watch people play parlor games on TV.
No, or even like, I was surprised, I said to my friend, like, them jumping off the thing into the water, like this whole challenge just from like a visual perspective. And then also like when they had to go down and like release that buoy, do you remember back in the day when they had to really dive deep, when there would be like the layers of where each time they had to go even deeper, and it was like, holy fuck, like they're having to like really like get their breath in order and like dive deep in that water. Whereas this was like, you know, just dive in and unclip a thing. I don't know. And then you had that moment with Banu doing, you know, going out of order, where you were like, oh my God, like, are they going to DQ him? And then Jeff's like, no, just go back. And it's like, okay.
Well, I mean, going back is pretty bad too. Like that takes up a lot of time.
Did it have any real consequence at the end of the day?
Well, they lost.
I know, but like, do you think that was the thing that made them lose?
I think it came pretty close. Like, okay. I think when it came to the shots in, I think had they had that time that Banu wasted, they may not have lost.
Okay, so here's my, like, and I'm not saying this as a conspiracy theorist. I believe, like, this is how it played out. But the amount of times where, like, we have these challenges come down this close to the wire is giving, to an extent, traitors, you know, the we're at 5 seconds left, just because, and again, in this instance, I do think traitors is manipulating things. I don't think they're manipulating things. I do think this is how it played out. But I'm like, it almost becomes so inevitable that the tribes ultimately all catch up to one another, that when you're watching these long challenges play out, you ultimately sort of watch thinking like, well, there is no consequence to who's in the lead, because we've seen so many instances where the people that are furthest back come back around. And again, I could argue, yeah, but isn't that exciting, because you never know who's going to win? Sure. But it does just always sort of comes down to this, like, oh my God, it's like, who's going to get it in? And I'm like, I would love it if like just one tribe just sort of like, you know, there was some dominance. But again, I'm talking this out as I say it. I'm like, yeah, but like, is that interesting? I don't know. But there's just, I guess what I'm getting at is like, I feel like this framework of like, it's coming down to like this one last shot is replicated in so many episodes that even though it is a nail biter, I'm like, we're always doing this.
Yeah, well, I think what we're missing here is that the casting has been very even. So I think they've taken a very concerted approach to even the tribe's athletic ability for challenges like this, in the sense that you've got sort of like four, maybe average athletic people, you've got one athlete, and you've got one person who's not athletic on each tribe. And so mm-hmm. that's sort of just what you're dealing with. And yeah, that definitely favors the athletic person in those tribes. And it's a big decision to vote them out pre-merge. But I think back to different ways that they could do this. It's like, let's say there's a tribe swap, right? Like, let's say next week there was a tribe swap. Instead of getting them to all pick buffs, get two people to get them all to pick rocks, and two people are captains, and then they pick their teams, because that really changes things up. And especially in seasons where there was more age diversity, sometimes people would assume like that they're like, oh, here's an older woman. I don't know anything about Jane in Nicaragua. Jane turns out to be a challenge beast, right? And so like that's a really interesting dynamic to see play out, especially when the players are given the agency to pick their teams and pick their tribes for that sort of like a period of the game.
Yeah.
And with regards to, here's another thing that's broken with this game. The fact that you can go to a reward challenge, like you know, one of the really first significant reward challenges, and you're unable to enjoy the reward because you haven't won one of the previous rewards necessary to enjoy this reward, is like, Your reward should not be dependent on a previous reward. It's not like a video game where I have to go collect this thing before I can go to do this next mission. You should just be able to get the reward and enjoy the rewards. The fact that Yanu has this very first victory, their first victory in the whole season, and they can't enjoy the fish that they've won because they haven't received a flint. Like, that is, who's designing this?
Right. But also, I feel like they shouldn't have the option to switch. No, it should totally. Be, you finally want a reward, and this is the new era, and as a punishment for, like, this is how the game works. So I agree with you, like, stupid reward. But if you're going to have that be the reward, you got to stick with it, which is that, like, they don't get to enjoy their reward.
It's like, yeah, go back and start rubbing sticks together. You want to enjoy this reward, or I hope you like sashimi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's interesting. What else do we have to talk about here?
Well, I did want to talk about the commercial for We Need to Talk About... Sorry, I'm talking about as I read my notes. We need to talk about the Apply to Be on Survivor commercial.
Okay, I missed that, but go ahead.
So,
well, I don't really pay it. I see them all the time, but I don't pay attention to them.
This was the first instance in which Jeff was referencing things that had just happened in the episode. So this was clearly filmed after the challenge, and basically the idea was... We're in the thick of the action right now. Here's, like, I'm giving you, like, the recap of what you just saw. Don't you want to get in on that? Apply to Survivor. I don't get it.
I do. I remember him doing that in 45 at some point.
Oh, okay.
Like, so do you think you? I bet you're sitting at home saying, I could have done that, whatever it was. And if that's the case, then apply to Survivor.
I just thought that was very odd. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah. I think what those commercials should be is like, hey, you're just channel surfing right now. You don't know what show you've landed on. Apply.
Yeah. Or I think it should be like, if you're watching this and you're a fan of the show and have the inclination to apply, please don't. We are completely full up, and we appreciate your interest in the show, but please remain a fan. We're good on the casting front.
Stay on the couch.
Exactly. That needs to be like the explicit messaging. Like, we appreciate your fandom. You know, we have this great new podcast with D co-hosting, you know, buy a buff, whatever. But whatever you do, please do not apply to be on Survivor. If you are a fan of this show, stay a fan.
I got to say, and I've said it a few times, I think mostly in the after show, though, but, you know, this season of Australian Survivor just wrapped, and I'm not going to give any spoilers here. I know, Evan, you will get to it in the next few years. And they sort of made a change to their usual casting, where they cast a lot of big fans of the show this season, and that was great. But they also had some recruits, and one of their recruits, who I will not name, was incredible and learned the game on the fly and played it better than a lot of many time returnees I've seen. And it was like absolutely exhilarating. And I think that it is worth noting that recruits can play and win this game if they really want to try. And I'm not saying whether the person won or not, but I'm saying, like, if they didn't, they certainly could have. And so, look, like, just fucking recruit. I'm not saying you have to recruit everybody, but there is something to recruiting.
No, I'm saying recruit everybody. What do you mean? Recruit everybody. Find people who do not want to be on this show and put them on the show. Like, that's the beauty of it. Like, you want your Courtney Yateses. Like, there's a reason why when we've done this in the past, it has worked. If you want to be on Survivor, this is not the show for you. Like, that needs to be how it's sort of messaged. I will say, just for people that are curious, I am 4 episodes into the Traitors UK season 2, and I'm hooked. Hook, line, and sinker.
And you know what? There's going to be like some surprises for you, because actually, and I'm not going to say where, but they're in the way that Traitors season 1 UK and Traitors season 1 US were virtually the exact same. I think there was like maybe to like the sheep counting challenge. And then in the US, we had the pick what was different in the broom challenge. There are actually significant differences, including like a twist that never happened in the US. So,
well, also just the presence of 4 traitors had me gobsmacked.
Totally.
Who do you think my 2 players are?
hang on, wait, I need to look at a cast list, but I would say Diane, 100%.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm. And Diane's friend.
No, I think my this one would be harder to guess.
Is it a man or a woman?
It's a he.
He.
Yeah.
It's not Ross.
No, it's not Ross.
The problem is I forget everybody.
Also, I'm sure we've said this before and I'm not breaking new ground. The best, so if we go back to a two-tribe survivor format, the best thing would be that everyone is a mother, daughter, mother, son, blah, blah, blah. And so everyone thinks that they're keeping the secret from everybody and everyone's in the same situation. I think that would be epic.
That's Big Brother 6.
Everyone was related. Everyone had
they were not related, but everybody went in with a secret partner and they were all told they were the only one with a secret partner.
Okay. Yeah. Genius. Love it.
Yeah. Okay. It came out like a few weeks in, but it's because like people started being like, okay, I have to tell you something. Like April's actually my friend and we know each other. And then be like, wait a second.
I mean, when Ross makes that comment about like his mother's cooking or something in front of her.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is 3D chess. Like, it's so, it's not just that it contains this interesting dynamic. It's like, they're savvy in terms of like, they're making television.
Totally.
They'd be like, we need to like, it's like, for instance, I'd compare it to like Suri and Jared, who were all about on Big Brother, were all about just like not having any connection to one another at all. And like not putting any people on the send. Whereas like Ross and Diane are like, we can form a connection. It just can't be mother son. So like
it's also crazy because they think that Paul is Diane's son. Genius. Like somebody thinks that and spreads that rumor, which is how we find out that Ross is actually Diane's son. And if you really look at them, if you put glasses on Diane, she's Ross. Like they're actually identical. And I think the glasses do a really good job of hiding it. If I had to guess who your other person that you're loving is, I would maybe guess Jazz.
Who's Jazz?
Okay, so it's not Jazz.
Who is that? Remind me.
He's a faithful, he's like Middle Eastern, he's...
Oh, no, I haven't gotten a lot of him yet.
Okay. I don't have any other guesses. Is it a traitor?
Yeah.
Oh, is it Harry?
Yeah.
Okay, see, I didn't like care for Harry a whole lot.
Oh, yeah, I'm loving Harry. I love like a... someone that you think is a himbo, but then like has more to them. But then like, then kind of like the himbo quality is pervade. Like, yeah.
See, when Kevin and I recapped the Traitors UK, we sort of like argued over Harry because Kevin was sort of saying like, he's the Aaron of the season. Like he is season one's Aaron. And I was like, no, he's not at all.
No.
Season two's Aaron is the guy...
The one I know who you're talking about. Other names. The one who looks like Voldemort.
What?
He's like a hot Voldemort.
Brian. This guy. This guy.
No, I forgot about him. Wait, is he still there?
I don't know.
I think he... No, he went home.
Yeah, okay.
No.
He kind of had a breakdown. He had an Aaron-esque breakdown at the round table.
See, but like, you're saying this and it's like, I don't remember.
Like, remember, he was like, oh, no. just one more thing. And Claudia was like, it was like the one moment Claudia got stern.
Brian or Aaron?
Brian.
Yes, I remember that, but you're comparing him to Aaron.
You don't remember Aaron's panic attack at the round table? No. When Maddie was like, you're a traitor, and then he had to go step outside because he had a panic attack? That was like the moment I realized this show was special. It was like episode 3-ish.
I can't say I do.
Maybe we need a Traitors UK 1 rewatch and recap.
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out.
Okay. Is there anything else we need to talk about on Survivor?
The last thing I just wanted to mention was Banu getting on his knees in front of Tiffany, which I thought was just insane. And I so appreciated Tiffany's response being like, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not doing, like, I see the scene work that you're trying to do. And like, I am not going to be a scene partner for this scene. And I just thought it was like a really excellent, like, work from Tiffany.
Yeah, totally agree. And it was also, but with regards to the scene work, I thought it was like a visually striking image.
Absolutely. But like, what are we doing here?
When I think about what are we doing here, I had to think, what are we doing here with spending 3 to 4 minutes on teaching Mariah how to jump when it didn't even matter for the challenge?
Not only that, but I feel like they wanted her to, like, look a lot wackier than she did. Like, the visual was not anything.
And somebody said, this is a question, I didn't pick this question out for our after show, but I'll just mention it here as more of a comment, that apparently Mariah has been on Wipeout. And so people are like, why are they, what is this narrative they're trying to sell? Like, she was on Wipeout. Like, she's not a dummy. She doesn't suck. So I thought that was interesting. I'd have to do more digging on that, but I don't really want to. Is there an emoji you would like to? Oh, well, there is one more thing I wanted to discuss. I really take issue with the no vote. If I could complain about one last thing, it's the not letting the tribe vote. Because now when we look back on this, like, yes, Bonnie was going to go home and he was going to go home unanimously, but let the vote happen.
Yeah, there have been times we've known who was going and we had to just vote. It's a formality of the show. I would say I take more issue with the Jeff doing this whole, what is the story of Banu to Banu thing, which he's done with several people now. Like, what is your story on Survivor? And I'm like, that framework of that question is exactly like, you know, I keep going back to that thing that you said several weeks ago of like, Jeff just doesn't get it. And it's like, this is one of those like prime examples of like, not only like, is the story of Banu not what you think it is, but I also don't need Banu giving his first person but third person analysis of the story of Banu. Like, I think that is, it's a wrap.
Well, also, especially
that's why you have the final moment after the torch snuff to like kind of give your like last words.
Especially when you've set up Banu as somebody who's not self-aware.
Right.
If somebody's not self-aware, I don't need to hear their self-story because I don't know whether to believe it or not. Not that I don't believe Banu, but it's like, I'm not going to get a lot of insight here as what you've told me in the past four episodes. But also just to the point of the vote, it's like, I realize they made this edit very clear as to what was going to happen. And I don't mind that. But to open the episode being like, Kenzie was going to go home. Q and Tiff were going to send Kenzie home. There is still like, even if it was a crazy move for them to keep Banu, there's an opportunity here that like there's three people voting and Banu thinks he's going home. Would be a great blindside opportunity if they wanted to take this risk and send Kenzie home. So let them vote.
See, that's why the producers like need to intervene at that point and be like, they need to strong arm Q and Tiffany and be like, you have to vote out Banu. Excuse me, you have to vote out Kenzie.
Yeah.
Like, we're making television.
All right, do you want to pick an emoji for our meme cap this week?
The fish?
10 fish.
Okay, yeah, 10 fish.
10 fresh fish. Okay, a fish of your choosing. And we are going to head over to the after show where we've got tons of questions, most of them not Survivor related, but we did that last week and it was so fun. So you don't want to miss out on that. The after show last week got maybe the best rave reviews we've ever had on our after show. It was a lot of fun. And wow. We really went off on some things. I had to turn the public preview off on that one. So if you want to hear the what's going on in the after shows, you'll have to sign up for the Patreon. The link to that is in the show notes to this episode. Of course, you can find us on Instagram at @dropyourbuffspod and on Twitter at @dropbuffspod. Evan, is there something?
I just wanted to say, I feel like there's been like a tenor shift in our fandom because I feel like we used to get a lot more pushback for being haters. And I felt very encouraged to be a hater. I mean, I even posted a little bit of haterade last night on the Close Friends during the episode and popped in to just look at some of the responses. And it's like dozens of messages encouraging my behavior. And I know you've exhibited similar behavior on the Close Friends. So I'm heartened, but like I do want to know, like, this is a tide shift because I remember when we first emerged as haters, that was like people were like, we got negative reviews, people were not vibing. So maybe we're having a more like fun hating, and maybe that's the difference. But I just want to point out, like, there seems to be a tide shift.
I agree. People are really here for it, and I love that. Okay, with that, we'll see you next week for episode 5. Bye.
Bye.